Welcome to the Research and Innovation, Legal and Legislative Affairs Committee meeting. We're starting a little bit later than we planned. And we'll begin by, we're calling the meeting to order, so we'll begin with a roll call. Ms. Chelsea Dewis is performing the function of our recording secretary today. You can do the roll call.
Trustee Dennis Barsima.
Here.
Trustee Nathan Hayes.
Here.
Trustee Bob Pritchard.
Here.
Trustee Tim Struthers. Trustee Eric Wasowitz.
Here.
Board Chair Wheeler Coleman.
Here.
Committee Chair John Butler.
Here. Mr. Brady, could you please verify that we have a quorum and that appropriate notice of this meeting has been posted?
Mr. Committee Chair, we have reached quorum. Just for the record, Trustee Struthers is present today. He's just not in the room at the time of the roll call, and appropriate notices have been provided by the university.
We have an agenda before us. May I have a motion to approve that agenda? There's a motion. Is there a second?
Second.
There's a second. Any discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposition? Seeing none, hearing none, the agenda is approved. There are two sets of minutes before you this morning. I may have a motion to approve the minutes of the meeting of August 16th, 2018. There's a motion and a second. Is there any discussion of those minutes? Seeing none, all those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposition? I misspoke. There are not two sets of minutes. There's only one. So we're done with that. I have just a couple really quick things to say. I just want to point out that this committee's doing some great work, and that has a great deal to do with the fact that we are overseeing a function of the institution that's very well managed. And we've seen some indication of that in the last few months. You all know that we have developed a strategic vision for research and innovative partnerships. We've seen in FY18 reports as well as news media coverage of our spike in research funding, a 26% spike in FY18. Congratulations to you and your team, Dr. Blasey. And many of us were present at the press conference with the University of Illinois leadership celebrating the creation of the Northern Illinois Center for Community Sustainability, part of the Discovery Projects Initiative. Is that what DPI stands for?
Discovery Partnership.
Partnership Initiative. Initiative?
Institute.
Institute. I was close. Discovery. So congratulations, and this is not a good news item, what I'm about to say, but we're also seeing an unprecedented amount of climate change related crisis all over the country, and so it's a good time to be doing some of the research and work that we are pursuing under these efforts. So we should all feel very relevant and timely today as we execute our duties. That concludes what I have to say generally. We have with us the U.S. UAC representative, Therese Arado. And Kathy Donnerline is here, even though she was promising to leave earlier. Do either of you have any remarks?
Thank you, Trustee Butler. Kathy just could not bear to leave. No. She's enjoying her morning so much. I just wanted, since this is the Committee on Research and Innovation, I just wanted to publicly recognize our faculty, because while we don't always hear the names and the activities associated with so much of what's going on research and innovative-wise is supported by the incredible work of the faculty at NIU, and their work is integral to success, along with all the other people who are also working behind the scenes to move forward these projects. And then, while it is hard to believe we're heading into the final weeks of the semester, I also wanted to recognize the faculty who are right now working tirelessly to ensure the academic and personal success of their students as they come to a rather stressful time in their semesters. And so I just wanted to recognize publicly that they are all out there doing their best to enhance our students' academic experience as well as enrich their lives in general. So thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for your comments. Ms. Doderline?
No, thank you.
Okay, thank you. So then I think we can move to public comment. Mr. Brady, have there been any requests to make public comment at this meeting?
Mr. Committee Chair, I have received no comments to address this committee.
Okay. At this point, I would ask that Vice President for Research and Innovation Partnership, Dr. Jerry Blasey, to present the university recommendation item 7A.
Thank you, Chairman Butler, for the kind comments and congratulations earlier. But as always, I think they really belong to the faculty and staff whose energy and initiative is responsible for the increase in research activity this year. And I also would like to thank the staff in the division because they are tireless in the support of the faculty as we move forward with the research programs. Action item, agenda item 7A seeks the board's endorsement to move forward with the Northern Illinois Center for Community Sustainability, or the acronym NICCS, which we've taken to calling NICS. As presented at past board meetings, NICS is the hub of the Illinois Innovation Network, or IIN. Our initiative will focus on two of the four IIN themes, food and agriculture and environment and water. And as you pointed out earlier, these are extremely timely as the environment is changing. In partnerships with the University of Illinois College of Agricultural, Consumer, and Environmental Sciences, government agencies, and the private sector, NICS will create new knowledge, inform policymaking, and inspire action in three interrelated areas of food systems innovation, water resources stewardship and development, and climate change adaptation. NICS will occupy an approximately 30,000 square foot research facility on the West Campus. And the West Campus site is a 20-acre plot just to the northwest of the Convo Center. The facility is envisioned to include a central core with offices for faculty, staff, and graduate students, state-of-the-art classrooms for on-site and off-site instruction, collaboration space, and conference rooms. Three wings will comprise research and innovation labs and a high bay for equipment storage and instrument storage and construction. Design efforts are anticipated to be initiated in 2019 with construction activities in 2020 and 2021. The total cost of the initial facility will be just under $23 million, of which $15 million is requested from the Illinois Department of Commerce and Economic Opportunity, and $7.9 million will be provided by NIU. The funds from DCEO are limited to capital funds and will be used for A&E and construction. NIU funds include $5 million for instrumentation and equipment and a $2.9 million in-kind contribution primarily for land and site improvements. I'll just take a few minutes to mention the status of the IIN and Discovery Partners Institute. As President Freeman and I learned earlier this week at a status report to the Higher Education Committee, the U of I system is moving rapidly on the initiative with facilities already up and running in downtown Chicago, and their organizational structure is well along. DCEO has the final proposal, and we still expect initial funding to arrive very soon in this fiscal year. So therefore, it's timely to request authority to proceed with this grant opportunity. Approval for execution of the required design, construction, and related expenditures to establish NICS will be requested at future meetings of the Board of Trustees. Formally then, The university recommends that the Research, Innovation, Legal, and Legislative Committee endorse this request and ask that the president forward it by means of the president's report to the Board of Trustees for approval at its meeting on December 6, 2018.
Thank you. May I have a motion to that effect?
So
moved. Is there a second?
Second.
Second. Excellent. Thank you. Is there any discussion of this item?
So I have a question. I mean, we were laying out funding $15 million from DCEO and then $5 million from us, but the total is 22.9. So where's the other 2.9 coming from?
Where's the what?
In kind? Okay.
Oh, so the 2.9.
Okay. Got it.
Yeah, it's just in okay. kind in land and parking and also some other physical space we'll be accessing.
Okay, and then the $5 million that we're on the hook for, we're looking at how to raise that then?
So we will be spreading that over the probably 4 years. So it's $1.25 million in equipment. Some of that will come out of the existing equipment funds at RIPS, and some of that we will have to redirect other resources or find other sources of revenue.
Okay.
Trustee Struthers.
So a series of questions. So first of all, this entity, NICCS, is simply a division of the university. This is not a separate entity in any situation or form. It's just simply as a...
That's correct.
Okay. My mic, yeah. With respect to the operating cost of this unit, I think would be fair to call it. I'd feel more comfortable if I had some sense of what we thought. So this is the capital piece of it, right, that gets it going, and the equipment and land and building. I have no idea what we should expect with regard to ongoing revenue expense allocations.
It's a good question, and it's one we're grappling with right now. So some of it will be, I would say, reorganization and redirection of existing efforts, particularly in the water resources and the climate change adaptation. There probably will be need to be new operating expenses associated with the food systems innovation. But again, we're planning on leveraging our partnerships with the UI system itself. I will also say that I think many of these research areas I have high potential for donor activity.
And I would say that in the spirit of program prioritization, which lives on beyond the process, we have a formal process for how we allocate faculty hires and participation in key university initiatives, support of our research clusters, teaching curricula that are attractive to students that will enhance enrollment are all things that advance a faculty hiring request. And so, as faculty turn over, those lines will be allocated to things that pass the test, and we would expect this to be competitive in that context.
Yeah. Helps. And I realize we have no idea, it would just be guessing as to what this might look like fully staffed, but and I wish we weren't on the record to some degree so to minimize your risk a little bit. But if you fast forward 5 years from now, how many folks do you think might be working in this division?
Well, I think the best model is looking at our Institute for Environment, Sustainability, and Energy, and there's probably, I would guess, 30 to 40 faculty involved in that. And I think they would have greater and lesser degrees of presence in the facility. I think that would be augmented by additional faculty. So I think faculty, I would say roughly 40-ish would be involved.
Okay, that's what I thought.
And might increase as the programs become more successful.
And then one of the key strategies whenever you build a facility like this and form a center is to think about shell space, to think about who you could attract to the building that would complement the educational mission, create some partnerships that would benefit students and faculty, but also a revenue stream. And those are the things we're still grappling with because it's early in the process and the opportunities haven't been identified embedded fully.
I absolutely get that this is the first step in the process, and there's so much to be determined. When this was announced, which is, to me, incredibly great, positive, encouraging news for the university, for sure. The only question that I had myself and got quite a bit of is the West Campus. and in an environment that we should have, and I think we do have a fair amount of excess capacity in the core campus itself, and I am a huge promoter of density and vibrancy and such, and the connection to the town, that would have been an ideal position. I understand there are constraints, but if we might just air that out a little bit and just talk about why the need to go west.
So there's a lot of ways I could approach that. First of all, I will state that I believe the university is badly in need of new modern laboratory infrastructure. Some of our buildings were our research laboratory and research intense departments are located shouldn't be located there. And so this is an opportunity to really enhance the attractiveness of the campus to faculty and students by having modern, state-of-the-art laboratories. So that's one answer. Another answer is that we're looking seriously in great detail in a partnership with the
DeKalb Food and Education Center.
Yes, thank you. Yeah. I still have trouble with all the acronyms.
Yeah, there's a lot of acronyms. Yeah.
Which will be located north of the campus, along Annie Glidden, and having that, the two institutions or the two entities in close proximity offers a lot of synergy, and I think we'll be able to leverage the efforts very effectively.
So just to build on that, we're in conversations to make 1+1=3, so that the pieces of NICS as envisioned that would do better near a population center, that would create synergy with things that would help community revitalization in the Annie Glidden North neighborhood. We are looking at a partnership strategy to put some of those things there, to take things like greenhouses that require more space and maybe a little more privacy and protection and easier in and out for trucks, to load things, for both of those entities, maybe putting on the West Campus. It's still preliminary, but we're very committed to working with community partners and community-based organizations to make sure that the maximum benefit to DeKalb and to the university is achieved through partnerships associated with the center.
Thank you. And then the last question would be so given that discussion, and just the context of the overall campus and the finance piece of it, will this touch the finance audit, whatever my committee is? Will that go through expenditure and such go through that committee as well?
Yeah. Yes. Further actions will go through the appropriate. Will be involved the divisions of finance and facilities, and items will be brought before the board as needed.
Okay. Which is great, and I think that just puts the light or the lens on the broader capital plan, the right. campus plan, the community plan, all of that stuff rolls into that. And I get this is the science piece and the academic piece to it. Right.
So we envision when there are programmatic aspects, they will be brought to this committee.
Yeah.
And when there's facility and finance activities, they'll be brought to the appropriate committees.
And if they're curricular pieces, they'll go to ASAP. Yeah.
Perfect. One last question then. So there's a piece of this that has engineering attached to the cost. So if we start to spend some money, I realize we'll approve this in December, the board will. If we start to spend some money on engineering, I just want to be sure we don't lock ourselves into that specific site at that time.
Oh, that's correct.
Before we make any final decision.
That's part of the reason we engage in A&E firm. It seems attractive for us, but we'll have to do some further coring and all of that.
Thank you.
Yeah, if I could just comment really briefly about the reason why this is before this committee right now as an action item. I think our thinking was we had a press conference on campus. Some trustees were present for that. I think we can all agree that this was a great thing to get to become a partner with the U of I for this project and to receive these funds. But I felt very strongly that the board needs to sort of put its arms around this project as a whole group, particularly because the institution is going to begin a process of moving forward these pieces. And I think they need to have the authority of the board working with them in that process. So, but everything that, it's too early now to have the kind of items that go before the finance, the FFOC committee. But it isn't too early for us to say as a board, we embrace this project and we want our leaders to move forward and make this happen.
And I'm sorry, I might have missed it because the conversation was going in that direction, but what's a timeframe of when we can expect an operating budget?
So we're starting to stand up our internal structure to address those that issue, and as well as the programmatic issues. And I think that we will need 6 months or so to really come to grips with that.
Okay, so sometime middle of next year.
I think that would be achievable.
Okay. I have a second question. So there's been some discussion, and I've had a couple of questions. Folks have come to me that with a change in administration in the state, our governor-elect has made some comments that he doesn't know if he is in support of the IIN. And so, you know, I know you've been doing some research on that, Jerry. Said, what comments do you have in terms of, is there any risk that the new administration in the state of Illinois could put a stop to this or somehow slow it down?
So the first thing I'll say, he was the governor-elect was asked a very specific question. Was he in favor of the then governor's IIN? And that's not quite the same as, are you in favor of IIN?
Right, exactly, right? Yeah.
And in fact, that is the view that the U of I leadership is taking, that they're very optimistic. They believe that the governor-elect will be in favor of it. But there was one major concern that the governor-elect expressed, was that the initial claim that there would be matching funds available for IIN / DPI had evaporated at the time that the legislation was passed. Both U of I and we have been very careful to try to maximize the matching funds that are available for the initial $500 million that was approved. U of I has now reached $290 million, and they expect that it's going to exceed that number easily. We're, as you can see, we're at $7 million. And we believe, and the U of I also believes, that the governor-elect's primary concern has been addressed. Mm-hmm. So I think that at this point in time, all the signals are that we should proceed. And I think, frankly, we have time ourselves to mitigate the risk, if there is any risk associated with it.
Thank you.
Other comments, questions from the committee? All right, seeing none, then I'll ask for a vote. All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposition? Hearing none, the motion passes. And so now we move to the university report, and I will also ask that Dr. Blasey address those items.
Yes, so as we're all aware, we've passed through a very pitched and exciting election season, and we'll have two reports, one on the state level. It won't be just about the election season, but cover a broad range of issues downstate. We'll also have a report on the federal situation, and then we'll follow up with a report by Corinne Bradberg on our IP portfolio, which was an explicit request at the last RILA meeting. So Dr. Strab will give the state report and turn it over to you.
Yeah, happy to, Jerry. Trustees, you have a very detailed written report in your materials. I'm happy, given the time, just to answer questions if you want, or I can walk through a presentation. I'm happy to do whatever you would prefer to do. I never would pass up an opportunity to talk about elections, but I'd be happy to answer your questions if that would be more preferable for all of you. Whatever you want. Well, I'll jump in and I'll try to make this as quick as possible then. So obviously, yeah, we did have elections. Not a surprise that we have a new governor-elect. The Democrats swept all statewide offices, which was also not a surprise. Interestingly, many of you may have seen already that we had somebody who has won the comptroller's race, who is now running for the mayor of Chicago, which is also not a surprise. So there wasn't really a lot of surprises from a statewide perspective. I think some interesting things at the state legislative level. Democrats picked up two seats in the Senate. There's still one seat that is not determined yet. In the House, they picked up six seats, so they're now at 73. There are actually two seats that haven't been called, one of which is separated by two votes at the last time I saw the vote count. What's important for those two things is that that gives the Democrats a supermajority now in both houses. And you might say, well, they have a Democratic governor. Why would that be important, right? Because usually if you've got a party, you know, a governor of the other party, it's important to have enough votes to override a governor's veto. In theory, Democrats in the legislature and the governor should agree, and so why would you need that? But well, what was Governor Pritzker or Governor-elect Pritzker's biggest issue that he ran on in the election, right? It was the graduated income tax. And he can't do that on his own. He needs a supermajority of Democrats on board to pass that, because it's got to be a constitutional amendment. So it'll be interesting to see what happens there. Locally, Jeff Kiker was elected. He will represent the 70th district, replacing Trustee Pritchard. Dave Severson, who's our senator, was reelected as well, represents the 35th district. He ran unopposed. We did have three new NIU alums who are elected into the legislature as well, so we're excited about that. And just a few minutes ago, we found out that one of the newly elected senators has a child who, has a son who is an alum of NIU, which I thought was kind of interesting. If you think about Governor Pritzker and his higher education agenda, he talked about growing the globally competitive workforce in Illinois, concerned particularly with three areas: increasing college affordability, keeping Illinois students in the state. I've said many, many times there's nothing really positive that came out of the budget impasse. The only little glimmer of positivity, I think, that you could argue came out of the budget impasse was it put a focus on higher education finally. And it really, the focus became because students were leaving the state at such a great rate. And then expanding economic opportunity and promoting innovation. And this goes to what Vice President Blasey was saying earlier about Governor-elect Pritzker. He certainly has a very similar, I think, view on economic opportunity, innovation, entrepreneurship as the previous governor did. Specifically, what has he talked about? Well, I think good things from a university perspective is if he's able to carry these things out. One, wants to increase the MAP program by 50% and increase the maximum MAP award awarded to each student. Wants to go back to restore funding for public universities to pre-round or administration levels. If that's the case, that would put us back at about fiscal 15, where we'd be at about $91 million. We received $83 million this past year, so that would be a positive if he's able to do that. He wants to enact a common application. That's something the university has supported. The Higher Education Working Group that Trustee Pritchard sat on when he was in the legislature looked at that. It's something that we weren't able to move forward as a piece of legislation yet, largely because of the opposition of the University of Illinois. We're hoping that maybe there's still an opportunity to move something there. And then he wants to, they don't need it. I mean, that's the main thing. They're concerned about losing their brand and their control over their admissions process. And so, I think that we'll see how this all plays out. I think that's those are positive things. Those are three things that if he was able to do, I think would be very, very beneficial to the university. All of you know that we're in veto session right now. We'll be in veto session actually today, very short day, take off next week, and then the following week, they'll have three more days of veto session. The question is, what's going on in veto session? And from a higher education perspective, the answer is not much. Yesterday, the legislature overrode 39 of Governor Rauner's vetoes, which is a pretty large number in many respects. I should be clear that that's not 39 total bills that were overridden, right? That was several in the Senate and several in the House, and both bodies have to override the veto. But there has been some activity. There's been some question about how much is actually going to be put forward, because you now have a Democratic governor, and so maybe Democrats just say, you know what, we're going to wait to the new legislative session, pass the bills that we passed, and let Pritzker sign them into law and get some victories. So we're monitoring that as things happen, but it's been a pretty quiet week so far. Going forward, I think the issues that you're going to see be the main issues talked about are the same issues that we've been talking about for the last several years. As we come back to accessibility and affordability, you're going to see performance-based funding is going to come up again in performance metrics in terms of university funding. You're going to see a push again by community colleges to try to get a four-year degree. So there's a variety of different issues that we've been working on and dealing with in the past. The other thing I think that I'm hopeful we'll be able to get, and actually this is something that may even come up in the veto session, is an AIM High trailer bill. Many of you remember we had the AIM High bill. We talked about that previously, which, you know, we have about $5.5 million now in additional scholarship money to give to our students. One of the concerns that NIU has expressed with that bill is that it's got to be spent all in 1 year. And so what you have then is a huge bump in 1 year potentially, and then how do you sustain that going forward? We've asked that the bill be rewritten to allow us to keep the money that we don't spend this year so we can spread it out over a longer period of time. There seems to be some support among the higher education working group for that. We're hoping that that might be able to be pushed, and that's something that we'll keep monitoring. So with that, I'll turn it over to any questions that any of you have.
Questions from the committee?
I've got one. Capital expenditures. Have you been hearing much about a massive capital bill?
Yeah, so that's a great question, Trustee Coleman. So actually, there's been some discussion about some sort of a tax increase that would happen, potentially in lame duck. I literally was just reading Rich Miller's Capital Facts here, where he argues that there are 8 Republicans who are lame duck Republicans who have argued that they would get on board with some sort of a tax increase. And we've heard this rumor all along that they would pass a tax bill, capital bill, and then allow Pritzker to sign it as soon as he enters into office. So that's still very much on the table. What that looks like, whether that comes to fruition, we'll have to wait and see. But I think it's more than just a rumor.
Other questions? Seeing none, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Yep.
I have to say it's a lot more intimidating giving that presentation with Trustee Pritchard sitting on the board now than it was previously.
He was nodding his head the whole time. Yeah.
Bob, how did he do?
Pardon?
How did he do?
Did he hear?
Well, he left a few things out.
we're running long on meeting time.
Okay. At this time, I'd like to call Dr. Anna Quiter to the podium to give the look at the federal situation.
It's great to be here with you all. I don't have any slides, just a quick few bullet points. First, I'd like to start by recognizing my intern, Ian Pearson. He's a junior majoring in political science and nonprofit and NGO studies. So I don't know when the next time is we'll be in the same room together, so I just wanted to call attention to his great work this year. As you all know, on November 6th, the entire 435-seat House and 35 U.S. Senate seats were up for election. The House flipped control, and the Democrats hold a 31-seat majority with 8 seats still undecided. The Republicans strengthened their control of the Senate and presently hold a 4-seat majority with 2 seats still undecided. The split party control of Congress and the slim majority in each chamber is likely to slow down the legislative process in the new Congress. Digging into the election results, NIU alumni Representative Robin Kelly of Illinois' 2nd District and Representative Don Bacon of Nebraska's 2nd District were both reelected. The Illinois congressional delegation will be 13 Democrats and 5 Republicans. There will be in the House. And of course, we still have our 2 senators, Senator Durbin and Senator Duckworth, who are both Democrats. There will be 3 new members of the delegation. Republican incumbents, Representatives Peter Roskam and Randy Holkren, will be succeeded by Democrats Sean Kasten and Lauren Underwood, respectively. And retiring Democrat Representative Luis Gutierrez will be succeeded by Democrat Jesus Chuy Garcia. Sean Kasten is a clean energy entrepreneur. Lauren Underwood is a registered nurse and health policy expert who was a political appointee in the Obama administration. And Chuy Garcia is a member of the Cook County Board of Supervisors. While committee assignments will not be announced until late 2018 or early 2019, extrapolating from the current assignments and their seniority suggests that Illinois is well positioned for leadership roles in key House committees, including Appropriations, Energy and Commerce, Ways and Means, and the Science, Space, and Technology Committee. Regarding caucus leadership, Representative Sherry Bustos is running for the Assistant Democratic Leader, which is one of the top positions in the Democratic caucus in the House. Senator Dick Durbin is expected to remain the Democratic whip in the Senate. For the remainder of 2018, Congress is expected to focus on completing the fiscal year 2019 appropriations process. Only 5 of their 12 appropriations bills have passed into law so far, with the remainder operating under a continuing resolution until December 7th. Among agencies under the continuing resolution are the National Science Foundation and the Department of Commerce, which are two priority agencies for NIU. It is unclear how the funding negotiations will proceed in light of the election outcome, as well as ongoing tension over funding for immigration-related provisions. And as I outline in your report, that's an interesting point is the way the appropriations bill that funds a number of the science agencies is the Commerce, Justice, and Science Appropriations Bill. And what that means is that there's one bill that does the Department of Commerce, NASA, the National Science Foundation, a number of other science agencies, and the Department of Justice. And so because there is not agreement on the Department of Justice and how that relates to immigration issues, that entire bill is currently frozen. So a continuing resolution that extends into the early calendar year 2019 is possible to likely. And at the moment, a government shutdown is looking pretty remote, but not definitely off the table. Looking ahead, Congress is likely to take another look at the reauthorization of the Higher Education Act. Immigration issues, especially the fate of the Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals program, are likely to remain at the top of the national agenda. Within the research enterprise, national security concerns and harassment are expected to remain focus areas for the executive and legislative branches. And we could also see a renewed push for an infrastructure package. And were that to happen, we would be working to make sure that that includes research infrastructure. And with that, I'd be happy to take any questions.
Questions from the committee on the federal relations report? Anything to add? Well, thank you very much. Thanks for coming to the meeting and being here.
Of course. Thank you so much.
Good to have you always.
A pleasure. Thank you. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Okay, and our last presentation or information item this afternoon is on our IP portfolio. So, Corinne?
And then, is there a clicker for the slides?
No. Okay, yeah. That'll be interesting.
Good afternoon. For those of you that I haven't met personally, I'm Corinne Bredberg, Assistant Director in the Office of Innovation. I will be giving a short overview on the intellectual property procedures and portfolio at NIU. Briefly, the Office of Innovation, or OI, administers the university's intellectual property policy and receives, evaluates, and protects IP submitted by faculty, students, and staff that are covered under the policy. The data that I'll be presenting today is from fiscal years 08 to 18, so the past 10 years. The OI receives approximately 10 disclosures per year. When an invention is submitted to our office, the OI staff utilize two rubrics for evaluation. We use a research relevance and inventor engagement rubric, which evaluates the invention's compatibility with NIU's mission, vision, and values. And the second rubric is a market analysis rubric, which identifies the size and location of the invention's commercialization market. We also use third-party market assessments as needed just to get some further information on the market. It's important that to note that we do not evaluate the scientific merit of the inventions that we receive. Generally, the OI uses three criteria for considering advancement of IP for protection. The first is a proof of, that the proof of concept data is sufficient for our patent attorney to capture the essence of the invention in draft claims. Currently, we do use external patent counsel who have expertise in key areas such as chemistry or engineering. Currently, the attorneys we engage with have terminal degrees in their related fields and professional juris doctorate degrees. Our second criterion is that the invention has not been publicly disclosed, or if it has been disclosed, it's been within 1 year of public disclosure. This is important to note because the U.S. has a 12-month grace period from the date of public disclosure, whereas international countries, with the exception of a few, do not have this grace period. Therefore, once something is publicly disclosed, we have lost international patent rights. The third criterion is that the invention is within the scope of the inventor's university responsibility and advances the NIU's research mission. So from FY08 to FY18, the Office of Innovation has received 96 disclosures. 85% of our disclosures come from the College of Engineering and Engineering Technology and the College of Liberal Arts and Sciences, with one-third coming from the Department of Chemistry and Biochemistry. NIU disclosures in the life and physical sciences are typically very early stage in terms of technological readiness. For example, a chemical synthesis for drug discovery has a much longer commercial path, approximately 10 to 17 years, compared to inventions derived in technology-based departments like mechanical engineering. However, NIU's early stage research needs patent protection so that the faculty member can publish and apply for grant funding in order to further develop the IP without the loss of rights. In addition to faculty disclosures, we have also received 10 disclosures from students or student teams. Under the IP policy, undergraduate students are not obligated to report inventions to the Office of Innovation unless they are employed by the university or they use significant resources such as specialized equipment to develop the IP. But they're welcome to come to our office for evaluation and for patent protection if they want to assign the ownership rights over to the university. Approximately 45% of our disclosures received in the past decade have advanced for patent protection. Again, chemistry applications were the most common due just to the ratio of the disclosures received and the early nature of the discovery needing protection. The OI files applications both domestically and internationally and may file multiple applications depending on a patent examiner's review or the market analysis. In the past decade, NIU has been issued 45 patents, with many applications still pending. According to our records, we have approximately 40 applications that are still pending at the USPTO. In the past 10 years, NIU versus, or via the Office of Innovation or the Northern Illinois Research Foundation have entered into 7 licensing agreements. To date, 2 remain active, one to a Texas startup for an electrical engineering invention, and the other to an NIU chemistry startup. There is also one license currently pending with a currently pending startup that had just been formed. As mentioned, inventions in engineering or technology rate higher on the technological readiness scale and therefore most marketable. Since NIU's IP portfolio is chemistry-based, or heavily chemistry-based, and these inventions need more time for development, regulatory clearance, and clinical trials than their engineering counterparts, identifying licensees for these areas and early stage research is challenging but can be highly lucrative. For NIU, protecting IP is an avenue to protect and promote faculty research and disseminate their findings for advancing knowledge for the public good. Our contracts have clear terms and conditions that protect the inventor and the university IP. In agreements such as licenses, NIU retains ownership of the IP. We never sell the IP outright. Additionally, each agreement defines a field of use or the area in which the licensee is going to use the IP. The university then retains the right to license to others who may have other fields of use. In all cases, the university sets licensing agreement milestones that the company must reach so that the IP is not shelved for the company's competitive advantage. This ensures that the IP is used to disseminate knowledge for the intent of public good. The university also retains a perpetual royalty-free right to practice and publish with respect to the licensed IP for the educational and research purposes. This clause ensures that the inventors can continue their research. One of the success stories that I'd like to talk about is with the Texas startup that I mentioned previously. In 2013, President Freeman, who was serving as vice president for research at that time, was in Chicago for a charrette. There, she was introduced to a new startup, Invictus Medical, Inc., who was working on a product to reduce plagiocephaly, or also known as flathead syndrome, for infants in the neonatal intensive care unit. Through conversations, Invictus became interested in licensing NIU complementary technology that could be part of their company portfolio. The invention developed by Professor Emeritus Dr. Sinhua Kuo and Dr. Li Xuan Liu in electrical engineering is a wireless communication integrated active noise reduction system, which is designed to reduce harmful noises in infant incubators. While licensing negotiations were taking place, the NSF Small Tech Transfer Research Program announced a funding opportunity that was perfect for an NIU Invictus collaboration. The grant was awarded, and both parties were able to use the grant funds to develop the technology further together. After the initial grant period, Dr. Liu's graduate student, who was set to graduate that semester, accepted a full-time position at Invictus to continue on the work, on the product, and she is still there today. Just recently, Invictus raised $1.26 million and is currently optimizing the system for use in NICU hospital settings. The success story highlights a licensing example at NIU, but also highlights the importance of networking and collaboration and how the Office of Innovation can facilitate strong, long-lasting partnerships involving NIU intellectual property. I'd be happy to answer any questions that you may have.
Okay, committee, Trustee Barsima.
Thank you, Corinne. So on Invictus, correct me if I'm wrong, Dr. Freeman, but I think this was one of the ones that you brought to the foundation. The NIU Foundation participated in this from a funding standpoint, did they
not? So when the Foundation Grants Committee did a pilot to look at innovation grants, Li Xuan Liu, the PI, brought forward that incubator technology, and she was indeed supported by the foundation, and that helped her be competitive for the NSF grant. With Invictus.
Can you, of whatever you can speak to, can you talk a little bit more about Invictus and what the financial relationship is with NIU and Invictus and the creator or the inventor? You know, what percentage of the revenues do we receive? Do we own a piece of the company, et cetera?
I'll let Dr. Blasey answer that question.
Okay.
So we probably shouldn't get into that, but we do we do have some ownership.
Okay.
I'll leave it at that.
Yes, Doctor.
Any questions? I'm sorry. Yeah. Trustee Coleman.
I text you. Can I?
Yes.
Yes. You
can.
Thank you, Trustee Butler. Corinne, first of all, thanks for the presentation. I do have a fundamental question about how we make available our patents to organizations to possibly license and invest in. Do we have, and then also, do we have an internal, or it sounds like the foundation is providing some grant money or angel funds that we regularly pitch these patents to?
So we try to maintain our data, our website, with current information about the patents and technologies that are available. Currently, we are short-staffed, and so we're a little behind on putting those up there. There's also other national databases through the Association of University Technology Managers, which is the professional organization that I belong to. They also have a database that is available. Generally, we are reliant on our scientists to go out to conferences that they may be presenting at and making those connections and then bringing those connections back to us so that we can reach out. Again, as our staffing level gets back to what I'll call normal, we hopefully will be able to reach out to companies ourselves.
Okay. So there's not an internal angel fund that we regularly call upon?
We have a small set aside in our budget for venture funding. So if there's an interest to commercialize the technology, we can provide a small amount of funding for that. Okay. And we also have the Northern Illinois Research Foundation that many of our researchers come to present to let them know what's being done at the university.
Okay. Trustee Struthers.
Maybe a tick or two off here in my focus, but I thought a year or so ago there was some discussion around collaboration with other universities, maybe with respect to the process of capturing the, you know, the external patents stuff and.
So that's sort of off and on again. We did make some inquiries at the U of I system about a year ago, and they didn't express much interest. But then just, it turns out, a week ago, we were meeting with some leadership from their tech park, and they're looking into it again for us. There would be some cost savings and probably a broadening of the expertise.
Okay.
We it's certainly not off the table. It's just been a slow conversation.
Great. I'm glad to hear that. Obviously, we'd all be quite positive on that idea, and it seemed to me that there was surely support, mm-hmm. and just encourage us to keep our foot on the gas there.
I think what happened in the initial conversations, and Dr. Blasey, correct me if I'm wrong, is there was a model where the U of I had assumed that responsibility for another public university. They had much less activity than we had. So assuming our responsibility was going to be a more complicated negotiation because it would tax their resources more highly, and I think that's part of the reason it's moved slowly.
That's a good problem.
That's accurate.
You know, and this is outside of this, but I know some of the trustees know this, but what we're doing at Code Orange right now with your group, Jerry and Corinne, you've been an enormous amount of help, so thank you on that. But this public-private partnership is just amazing. So if any of the trustees have not been there, highly suggest you go and take a look at the facility in the basement of the library. It is great. We were on the field last night,
Lisa,
talking with Mike Brenner, who represents Discover here, and he is so excited about, he had 37 students, mm-hmm. I think,
yes.
This semester. They've got over 70 now, wow. For next semester, which is phenomenal, and he's extremely excited.
So thank you. Once again, that was very much a team effort, and Laura Sala had a part of it, John Heckman and Corinne were all instrumental in making that happen. It really is a fine example of how the university can pull together across divisions.
And Mike was telling us last night, too, that the president of Discover is coming out here in the first week of December.
Yeah, so Corinne, maybe you want to expand on that? Is that part of the Amazon visit?
I'm not sure. I just received an email today from Mike asking how to extend an invitation to our president for a meetup for that.
You know, I think the other point that we can take away from Code Orange goes back to what Corinne said on maybe the first or second slide, that the professional network and leveraging that is very important in trying to make these connections. So, you know, Invictus wouldn't have happened the way it did if I, as the vice president for research, wasn't networking, and Nick Koronis and his alumni had a lot to do with Code Orange. And so the board members for the Research Foundation and others, using your professional context and helping us reach out to people with expertise is very important in trying to connect our faculty and their inventions to resources that can help move them forward to the market.
Absolutely.
So on Discover, I just want to add that we're thinking very hard about how to use the other part of that footprint downstairs, thinking of what I'm calling use cases and starting to consider invitations to Innovation DuPage to bring some programmatic elements. Amazon is visiting the other half on December 6th, mm-hmm. and there's some chance that we may engage with them as well. And we're looking to start standing up more programs early in the next year.
Great.
Outstanding. Other, yes, Trustee Pritchard. Just a
quick clarification. Of the 45 patents that have been issued, are any of them close to commercialization?
I would say that the one with Invictus is the closest. Again, the patents that come from engineering are closer to market readiness. So if there were any that were close, it would be the ones from engineering. But we have not successfully commercialized anything to date.
Thank you.
But we have licensed.
We have licensed. I'd say about half a dozen. Mm-hmm. And they're most primarily out of engineering.
Yes, I'd like to kind of redact my comment that nothing has been commercialized. There have been others. There have been some technologies that have been licensed and commercialized. It's just nothing from our startups that we have had has been commercialized.
I just have a simple question. Does the College of Engineering have any sort of setup of the Invictus technology in-house?
I'm not sure if it's still set up. I know at one point in time, Dr. Liu did have an incubator with kind of a rudimentary setup. Mm-hmm. Of course, that was probably 4 years ago now. So the way that Invictus has taken the technology with, you know, new speakers and new aero microphones, it may look completely different. But at the time, yes, we did have a setup in, I believe, in the digital signal processing lab.
I've been in that lab, mm-hmm. and it's fascinating, and I just wanted to encourage perhaps the trustees as individuals to mm-hmm. schedule an opportunity to play around in the School of Engineering, not just that lab, but other labs. It's fascinating, and mm-hmm. I'm sure the dean would take you around. Okay, if there are no other questions, thank you, Ms. Bredberg. I appreciate your leadership, not only in this regard, but as already been mentioned, the Discovery Project. Are there other matters to come before the committee? Seeing none, the next meeting date for this committee will be February 7th, 2019. May I have a motion to adjourn? Is there a second?
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposition? Seeing none, the meeting's adjourned.